Now I have the great pleasure of introducing Catherine Burnett. She is a professor of great value to all of us, although they stole her to be at South Texas College of Law. She speaks often. She used to work for the Court of Criminal Appeals, and then she got smart and got a real job. But anyway, she's a wonderful instructor and speaker and a good friend, and you will learn a lot. Catherine.
Hey, and good morning, and welcome to A World Without Water. This is what it could look like going forward in our lives. Okay, I want to start with a moment of gratitude and take the time to say thank you to all the folks whose names appear on this slide and the entities and agencies that support our writing as lawyers, whether we're prosecutors or defenders. So thank you. Thank you, Baldwin. Thank you et al. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate the work. So, findings of fact, why do we care? Here's my operating premise and the one I hope you will take away. If I could sing, I'd sing it. If Judge Newell were here, he could play the soundtrack. It's all about the facts. It's all about the facts all the time. That's how criminal trials are won, right? That's often the tipping point on appeal. And as Carmen pointed out for us yesterday, we need to set that foundation at the trial court level. That's where the setup comes. And then appeals, that's the space I'm most frequently in. Facts are mission critical, as Michael reminded us on Wednesday. So we're going to start with standards of review. And I'm thinking some of you are thinking, what? Standards of review? I thought this was a finding of fact topic, and even if it's not, we did standards of review with Michelle yesterday, so wasn't that already covered? Why are we replowing that ground? I want to start here because this is where our reviewing courts determine how much deference they're going to give to the proceedings below. And hopefully, by the time this is over, we'll all be thinking of using fact findings to shape how much that deference is, how much control the trial court has. And then as a matter of stretching the topic just a little bit, how we use our fact findings to frame the narrative, to frame our story. My theory, and I hope one that you will embrace, is that standards of review have a potential critical pivotal role in crafting the proposed fact findings that we make. They can be a game changer if we use them strategically, if we make them fact-based. Now, clearly, we all know that the differing standards exist because the courts function, they have discrete functions at different levels, right? Appellate courts serve primarily to correct legal errors and to develop the jurisprudence of an area of law. Trial judges resolve contested fact issues, right? And they make credibility determinations about the people that are testifying before them. We're going to come back to that. The standards of review exist on a continuum, and my takeaway for today is that as advocates, our strategy might be to reframe what's going to be the standard of review used in our case, and if necessary, to recast, to move from the left to the right on this sliding scale, on this continuum. So, what is the continuum? Well, the paper sets out five areas of deference, but for our purposes here are the big three. No deference, moderate deference, great deference, right? We know the no deference is the de novo questions of law. For example, assessing whether court costs or DNA record fees violate separation of powers. Question of law, right? Moderate, abuse of discretion, evidentiary rulings, credibility determinations. That's the large zone of reasonableness. And then great deference, a clearly erroneous standard. That's when we're talking about questions of fact, right? If those questions of fact are supported by the evidence. If we have questions of fact supported by the evidence, a reviewing court is going to give almost total deference to the historical facts. And this is particularly true if those historical facts are based on an evaluation of demeanor,